there are tips to help you overcome some difficulties that arise. Like drowsiness or sleepiness is one thing. When you can you hear me in the back?
Yes. Yes.
So if you feel drowsy or sleeping, then you're allowed to stand up and stand right behind your mat and cushion. And then with hapjang. And then if you wish, you can tiptoe a little bit. That would help wake you up right away. So you can do standing meditation like a tree for a while. And then when you feel waking up, then you can sit down. Or the other way is you can, with the tip of your tongue, you can lick the roof of your mouth several times. That helps you. Otherwise, you can, with the thumb, you press very hard. It hurts, you know, until it hurts. If you do it too much, it will kill you. So, also that, also, when your food or when your teeth go asleep during the meditation, don't try to stand up. You can stumble and fall down. So that wakes your food. And also, while waiting for your turn for interview, you stand with hapjang. Bring your body, mind, and breath together. And doing the true practice. And before the person ahead of you being interviewed, until the person exits, please don't come into interview room, okay? You wait until the person completely exits and leaves. Traditional summer retreat, which is called Vasa. It goes way back to the Buddha's time. It's like we have here hurricane and tornadoes, but over there in the South Pacific or Indian Ocean area, they will have what they call typhoon, which is something like hurricane. In fact, it develops over there and travels all the way between Korea and Japan. And they have a typical word in Korean. It's called Jangma. It's a rainy season. So it really rains like cats and dogs, and continuously for 2 weeks, even sometimes for a whole month. So traveling for monks is not worth for monks, for everybody. It's impossible. And particularly also concerned with this rain and heat. All the insects, everything comes alive, lush, and the plants and weeds. And then we see you can, there are trees, so where the trees, you see birds, and where birds are, they sing, you know, in the morning. And then also, the the birds, now is they stopped, because there are certain times they keep time. You know. And then also around evening, they will sing, you know, I think different birds. So actually I composed a poem about those two birds, the birds singing. And so it's, and then where the weeds grow, then of course snakes and other animals, they also make their nest. Even in the temples, where temples are, so the monks, they stop traveling and they stay, like they used to be called the vihara. So they stay vihara. There are different words were coined to provide accommodation for the monks. So they stay together. I study sutras or just meditate. So it's this tradition has been still going on in Theravada and Mahayana Buddhist countries. And also it goes with the ascetic practice. It's called the Tutanga, and then two of them, you know. And it's in Southeast Asia, the monks who follow this Tutanga practice, they are called the forest monks, because they are not supposed to have their own temples, you see. Well, the climate is right, so they stay at the foot of the mountains or under trees. It's a forest monks. Now, so in Korea, sometimes there are kind of organized, established monasteries for this purpose, for student monks and student meditators, young monks. And for some senior meditators, meditating monks, they don't like to mingle with the junior ones. So they like to have some very solid, firm practice with like-minded monks. You know. So they attract each other as Dharma companions. So they get together, sometimes spontaneously this group is formed. And then they find there's sometimes abandoned amja, abandoned several temples, usually huge public monastery where they where these monasteries at the foot of the mountain, and then eventually one way or another they give rise to small, what they call silver temples around the mountains. So sometimes silver temples are occupied by these senior meditators, you see. So they have these winter sessions, winter months, and the summer sessions. It lasts about 3 months in Theravada countries. It lasts more like 4 months, which ends with a katina ceremony. They get new robes at the end of this. The lay people, they bring supplies, you know, like toothbrush and things like that, which is called a katina ceremony. And but in Mahayana countries, in countries like Vietnam, Korea, Japan is more like secularized, in China, and I don't know much about Tibet and Mongolia or in Tantric Buddhist communities. But they have 3 months in winter, usually covering November, December, and January, sometimes February. And then in summer months, you know, it's usually first day, there's a Buddha's birthday celebration, which falls sometime in May. And then, so these months, they usually go and help out. Then they get some allowances, handsome allowances. And with that, usually the summer retreat begins, Kyeltse begins a week after the Buddha's birthday celebration. So they get together and then they have to, so that they have to stay still, not moving. So they have to get all the supplies, mainly food supplies, in case of a summer retreat. So there was an elderly monk who was well seasoned in the Sampang tradition. So he heard some of these monks talking about, you know, get together and have some solid, strong retreat. And then they were heard them discussing about, buying some supplies. So he said he volunteered. Don't worry about your food supplies and all the necessities they may need a requirement. I can take care of that. So you just go, pick the place, and to come up with a schedule, which is called Yongsangbang, and do solid practice. I'll be your bodhisattva. So whatever you need, I'll supply that. So they were overjoyed, and also felt a little ashamed. This elderly monk offering such a volunteer service for their sake. So he would go around, so the monks just stay and follow the schedule and do the practice completely free from secular anxieties. And so he would go, you know, climb down and visit villages and hamlets to gather, you know, food supplies and whatever they need. And then sometimes he would be gone for a few weeks, and sometimes just for 3 days. So then he had to carry them all to the almost top of the mountain. That requires a lot of labor. So he would do that with joy and happiness. But then when he arrives, when he sees everything's quiet, the monks are into deep samadhi, then he was very quiet and like serving, like treating them like a Buddhas, you know. And he would make a deep bow and then very quietly go into the kitchen area to unload and sort out their supplies. But sometimes when he arrives, these monks, instead of sitting in some bar and meditating, they get into either chit-chat. Then he flows into huge fury, and, you know, beating them hard, you know. He's the son of So that's how he trained. So anyway, this is an American story, you see. So I try hard, I try my part to take care of you, see. Standing, sitting, or going to Central Park and dancing too, you see. This morning, Duansin performed the miracles. He was negotiating with the rainmaker. And you see that? You know, this drizzle was like a blessing. You know? And then from time to time, you get bigger raindrops. And then all of a sudden, stop where we are, you know, doing working meditation. And then just a few few feet away, you can see that the big raindrop coming down. So that's when he was negotiating with the rain maker, you know, to protect our walking meditation. And I heard him saying, you know, if you don't listen, I'll banish you to Sonora Desert in Algonquin International Park. You see. And I said, no, you know. So, anyway, so that's why that's partly, you know, you have to remember the motto, three mottos of this Yongmen Zhengjin. You know, the first one, deep humility. You are yet to discover the quality of a deep humility. And then profound gratitude. And then true practice. So the practice, your practice without deep humility and profound gratitude is not true practice. That's why I use the word true practice. So throughout the day, because now, even though this weekend quiet, soon the city would wake up. And then you know what that means when the city wake up. And the noise increase, you can see. So, and then in that process, deep humility and profound gratitude may dissipate, you know, and you lose true practice, which open heavens, you see. So then let me tell you this and then finish. By the way, soon we'll be going down for breakfast. Eat little, okay? Eat less. You know how it is. You cannot do this practice with a full stomach, you know. So eat less and drink more water, you see. I kept a pitcher. There we have a small kind of freezer. It's there, so drink water. And don't lose deep humility and profound gratitude and true practice. And I received a letter from someone whom I knew, some could have been 35 years ago. His name was Myungju Sunim North, because now he goes to Detroit Zen Center. This was well before Detroit Zen Center was founded. His name is Steve Jones. At that time, he was a Detroit Free Press journalist. So basically, first he came to cover a news story about our temple in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And because the temple in Ann Arbor, Michigan opened in 1982, and so I visited in 1981 and conducted a retreat, but anyway, I think a few years later. So he was himself was interested in Buddhism, so he asked me questions and how he can help himself keeping Buddhist values while serving as a journalist. But not long after that, there was some kind of dispute or something, or labor union struggle or whatever, and you would know better. And then so the Detroit Free Press was closed, or I think merged with the Detroit, the other newspaper. And he may have taken intercourse with me, I forgot. But anyway, he remembered some of my teachings in his letter, he said. And then he took trouble to write to me, two-page letter. And then, but he thought I was in Toronto, 86 Vaughan Road, so the letter was sent to 86 Vaughan Road. So Toronto Temple is there, we moved it and we moved it back to old address, so luckily, and then she brought me the letter. Here in his letter, he mentions two things about how, you know, while in the midst of this hustle and bustle and commotion, which people face every day, and also Buddhism is in the marketplace to help these people. That's where we are right now. So how can you keep up with the Buddhist values or Buddhist practice? I said, well, days go by without me even remembering them. So then forgive yourself, try again. That's he remembered all the time. So he said, the two things he said I taught to him was watch under your step and then forgive yourself. If you forgot practice, then forgive yourself and try again.